As I said, we're going to finish up Leviticus today. We're in chapter 17 and going to go all the way through chapter 27, and I titled it Holy, Holy, Holy. You know, as I was thinking about the lesson this week, I got thinking about kids. And assuming you have children who obey, I know that's a large assumption on some parts, but assuming you have children who obey, why do you think they obey? Maybe a better fear. Maybe a better reason of saying way of saying that is, when you were a child, why did you obey?
Fear.
There you go. He's there. You can say that. Fear. What?
Easier life.
Just made life easier if you did obey. Other reasons why you obeyed or why your children obeyed.
The sky would fall.
The what? The sky would fall if you didn't. Okay. Anyone else? Reasons why you obeyed your parents. Didn't want to disappoint them, right? Just didn't want to disappoint them. It, as you said earlier, kind of just easier, right? What about just love for your parents?
I think about midway through, after you get over the fear.
Okay, respect it. As you grow older, it begins as fear. And maybe it kind of grows more into respect as you get a little older and a greater understanding of what your parents are trying to do. We have four children, and all the children are different. Those of you who have multiple children understand that. I know that one of our children, she would cry before the punishment ever even got there. I mean, she would just be in a heap, bawling her eyes out, crying, please don't, I will never do whatever it is I did, I'll never do it ever again, don't touch me, don't hit me, please. We had another child who was just the opposite. It was kind of like, bring it on. I mean, you can't beat me bad enough, it's not going to hurt bad enough, it'll hurt for a little while, I don't care, bring it on, I'm ready. That's kind of the way we do with God sometimes, isn't it? I mean, sometimes it's just bring it on. I don't care, God, you can't hurt me. Just bring it on. I mean, we have this theme throughout Leviticus of God's holiness. Be holy, for I'm holy. And we see that over and over and over again. But what does it really mean? I mean, what does it really mean to be holy, to live a holy life? And what I want to do today is address three different questions. The what. What is holiness? What does holiness look like? Is it just a list of do's and don't? Do this, don't do that, do this, don't do that, don't. I mean, that's what your kids hear all the time, right? No, don't, quit. Is that what holiness is really all about? The second question is why? Why live a holy life? I mean, does it really make any difference, really, whether we live a holy life or we don't live a holy life? What difference does it really make? And the last question is how? How do I live a holy life? I mean, I've been trying to do that, and I just keep failing over and over and over again. How do I live a holy life? So what, why, and how? Let's begin with the what first. What is holiness? What does it look like? Well, as you look at chapter 17 here of Leviticus, look at verse 11. I believe it's a very key verse here. In verse 11 it says, "For the life of the flesh is in the blood, and I have given it to you on the altar to make atonement for your souls. For it is the blood by reason of the life that makes atonement." God gives us some insight here. What is holiness? You see, He says blood is life, and it's what sustains you. And the sacrifice here that's being offered, of course, is blood. It's being bloodshed. It's the giving of life. And you see, that's the paying of a ransom. We talked about that in chapter 16 last week, the Day of Atonement. It's the paying of a price for you. And so as this price is paid for you, this blood is shed for you, the atonement is made for you. And so as you look through chapter 17 here and chapter 18, you really start seeing a list of do's and don'ts. A list of do's and don'ts. Look at chapter 18. It really deals with sexual sin here. You see the phrase over and over as you walk through chapter 18, the phrase, uncovered the nakedness, if you have a New American. If you have an NIV, it may say, or a New King James, it may say, the nakedness of. And simply all that means is sexual relationship. A physical relationship of any type whatsoever, with anyone other than your spouse. A physical relationship with anyone other than your spouse. And very easily what it says there is, don't do that. Verse 8 says, you shall not uncover the nakedness of your father's wife. Verse 16 says, you shall not uncover the nakedness of your brother's wife. It is your brother's nakedness. Verse 22 says, you shall not lay with a male as one lies with a female. It's an abomination. Pretty easy to see there. This is a list of don'ts, right? Don't do this. Don't do this. And they all have to do with sexual sin. As you move into chapter 19, it kind of changes gears. Look at verse 2 there. It says, speak to all the congregation of the sons of Israel and say to them, you shall be holy for I am holy. All right, we got the picture. What is it now? What does holiness look like? What is that holiness? You've told us to be holy. What is it? What does it look like? In verse 5, the peace offering there is mentioned again. Remember the peace offering? That's the one that was offered when you have a relationship with someone where you're not demonstrating love towards them. Remember, that was the offering that was given in case that was a situation in your life. He says, well, what does that look like? How do you know if you have a relationship with someone that's not being demonstrating a demonstration of love? Well, you look in verse 3 there, and it says, your parents, reverence your mother and your father. That's where it starts. It starts there, and you just keep going. Verse 9 and 10 deals with the poor. How are you treating the poor? When you come down to verse 11, you don't steal. Verse 12, don't swear. Verse 13, don't rob your neighbors. Verse 14 and 15 starts dealing with injustices. You see someone who's got physical deformities, maybe, or they're blind, or they can't hear. Well, you don't treat them bad. It's all to do with our relationship with others. And it just keeps walking through it as you walk through the entire chapter here. It just keeps going. You shall not, in verse 17, you shall not hate your fellow countrymen in your heart. And it just goes on and on. This is what it looks like, it's saying over and over again. So chapter 18 deals with sexual sin. This is what holiness looks like. Chapter 19 deals with our relationship with others. And then you move into chapter 20. Now chapter 20 is a lesson all in itself. Folks, I read so many commentaries this week on chapter 20. Just on chapter 20, nothing else. This is known as the capital punishment chapter. It's advocates of capital punishment point to it and say, see, God says execute them, kill them. And here's God saying do it, so that's why we do it. Well, of course, those who oppose capital punishment look at this chapter and say, well, look, if you're going to take it literally that God means for you to kill them, then you've got to take everything in the chapter literally. And so if you're going to do that, you've got to execute any husband who has a physical relationship with his wife during her monthly cycle. So if you're going to kill people, fine. That's what you said Scripture says to do here, but you've got to do what it says here and kill them for even that. You see, when it says to you're to execute both of them, you've got to understand something here. The biblical view of the law is different from the modern view of the law. God gave us the law to restrain sin. God gave us the law to restrain sin. Now, we lose sight of that. That God gave us the law to restrain sin, not to reform sinners. Now let me say that again. God gave us the law to restrain sin, not to reform sinners. We have a tendency to think that the law is going to reform someone. The penalties that God's imposing, you understand, they are the upholding of the law. They're not to improve the offender. They're not going to make you a better person. You see, the law, certainly it is a light. Certainly it exposes sin. That's what the law does. Certainly it restrains evil, but it never changes the heart. And that's what the key chapter of the chapter is saying here. It's not going to change your heart. Look at verse 7 of the chapter. He's talking about the law, and what does he say? You shall consecrate yourselves, therefore, and be holy, for I am the Lord your God. Right in the middle of all this, he says, be holy. Remember what we're talking about here. We're talking about what does holiness look like? And he's saying, look, this is holiness. Be holy. There are some 15 different offenses listed in Scripture that are capital punishments. Everything from cursing your parents to the physical relationship even before marriage. But understand, capital punishment is never in Scripture to cure crime. Here's what it does do, though. It does tell us, it declares that human beings are, we're made in the image of God, and since we're made in the image of God, that life is a gift from God. And what it's saying then is it reminds us that we're to show respect for the law, we're to show respect for life, we're to show respect for other, as we said in chapter 19, for other human beings. Why? Because they're made in the image of God. And so here's what the capital punishment is saying here. If you take that gift from someone, that gift of life that God has given, that image of God from someone, that gift is going to be taken from you. That's very simply the Scripture's position on capital punishment. And so when we look at holiness and what does holiness look like, it's concerning the image of God. It's not concerning us deterring crime. It's concerning us having the image of God in our minds. When you move into chapter 21 and chapter 22, it begins talking about the priest and the requirements that the priest had for the priesthood. And you go, well, what in the world does that have to do with me? You understand the qualifications here are for personal conduct. There are physical characteristics for them. There are professional concerns. Here's what it's saying, and this is what is applicable to us. There's a price to pay. There's a price to pay to be a priest. There is a price to pay for us, the priesthood of all believers, as we talked about last week and week before. And so when you look at chapter 21 and chapter 22 concerning holiness, we see that there is a price for us to pay to be in the priesthood. And then we move into chapter 23 and chapter 24 and 25. It deals with our worship. How our worship is to be holy. How our worship is, you can't just worship any way you want to worship. It's the prescribed ways for us to worship. God created you. You've got to worship your Creator in the method in which He called for you to worship Him. He prescribes what worship is to look like. You can't decide what that worship is going to be. Now, that's what holiness looks like. But, of course, we've gone through this very, very quickly, and I've skipped some verses. There are a couple of verses specifically that I want you to...